there, everybody. It is November 28th, 2013. Gobble, gobble. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send that email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn about all the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We are taking a step back today to just look at the whole landscape of LGBT news and media with two of our favorite guests, so we must get started with the first one. Kathy Renna is the Senior Vice President at Target Q, managing the public relations and communications facets of this amazing storytelling firm. Prior to that, she was a founder of Renna Communications. Over her 7 years with the firm, Renna Communications partnered with more than 50 different organizations, including the Matthew Shepard Foundation, the Family Equality Council, the Point Foundation, ACT UP, tons and tons more. Kathy is a nationally recognized media relations and communications expert, a leader within the LGBT community. She has served as the primary spokesperson and the community relations director for GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, and was also their first national news media director. She has appeared on every major news outlet, and now she is here with us, Kathy Renna, one of our favorite guests of all of our guests. Welcome back for a sixth time to This Show Is So Gay.
We don't need to read the bio anymore. It takes too much
time. I know, because we have so much to talk about. I have to tell you,
I'm feeling really old. I'm starting to get awards. It's like, you know you're old when you're starting to get awards. I just got an award from like a youth organization on Long Island. I'm getting an award from Queen's Pride.
I will read you the first line that I have. Congratulations. I've learned you will be honored by Queen's Pride.
I know, and I just moved back here in July, but, you know, I was born here, and I lived here till I was about 12, and then I was ripped from Queens and went off to Long Island, which was fine, you know, but, you know, I'm a Queens girl, and being back even just for these few short months has proven it, just by my great love of my neighborhood, and my foul mouth has returned.
Have you found that you've been cussing more since you've returned?
Just a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Queens is fantastic. People don't know Queens is, like, the most diverse county, I think, in the entire country,
yeah,
in terms of the, you know, you don't need to travel around the world because all you have to do is go to Flushing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can go anywhere in Queens and be in an amazing neighborhood with, you know, incredible people and restaurants and culture. So it's just, it's fantastic.
All right, you're making me miss New York. You were last on the show back in January, and we were talking about the year ahead, and we have so many events to talk about, and we'll talk about the landscape. But I kind of want to take a step back, because I was listening to some of your past appearances on the show, and we haven't really taken the time to talk about what it is that you do, because I called, I want to get to that, because
we can't talk about how we make the sausage.
Maybe just a little bit, because I would say, and maybe you would disagree, your specialty really is in storytelling, in taking these various events and folks that come your way and telling their story to the world. Is that accurate?
I think that's actually really probably one of the best descriptions I've ever heard. So thank you.
Oh,
I'll use that.
Great.
And you hear lots of other people and organizations use that phrase, you know, telling your story, getting your story told. And I think that's because, you know, when I started Renna Communications in 2006, that was our tagline. You know, it was, we'll get your story told. And that's, to me, that's what it's all about. As I said to a journalist the other day recently after lunch with some other folks, we were leaving and she said, In a tone that you could tell she was saying with a little bit of surprise, she's like, "You're really nice." And I said, "Well, I'm not your grandma's publicist. You know, I don't really consider myself a publicist. I'm an activist. I don't, you know, I mean, if I have to describe what I do, I have to say public relations. I have to say media. But the reality is, you take the girl out of GLAAD, but you can't take the GLAAD out of the girl.
Right.
I don't do things unless they're really going to move an issue forward or tell a story that hasn't been told or told in a way that we've seen before. And that's, so thank you. I appreciate that. And now my girlfriend will understand what I do because she constantly asks me, like, what do you do? I don't really understand it.
Well, you need to listen to me on this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay,
right,
and you'll understand.
I'll have to listen.
Well, we'll be talking. John Becker, our friend John Becker, is going to be on the show a little later on. He adores you. And
yes, I adore him.
He's great, too. And we'll be talking about his voice. And you mentioned it a little bit about how you look at these stories that come your way. But there are any number of PR folks out there who are trying to find kind of the most salacious aspect of the story. And one of the things that I love that you do is that's not how you look at it.
No, not at all. I mean, to me, it's often the most everyday stories. Because that's what, to me, the thing is, having an audience, whether it's someone who's reading a story online or someone who's watching something on television or a film or whatever, having them somehow find a way to relate. Because we, at the end of the day, no matter who we are, we have something in common, right? And if you can find that bridge, that commonality, then you can start to relate to the differences. And then you can say, and see that the differences are not something to be afraid of, not something to be, you know, even afraid to ask questions about, but something to learn from and to enjoy and even celebrate.
Because I would imagine that's one of the challenges in doing what it is that you do, is that we want to find those stories that reach out to just a broad swath of the population, but then we don't want to normalize it to the point where the moral of the story is we're just like you, because there is power in the LGBT voice.
Like, yeah, I'm a very anti-assimilationist person. Anyone who knows me knows that. And at the same time, I don't want to be marginalized.
Right.
Or ghettoized, you know. So it's a very delicate balance. You're right. I think that's a really smart way to put it. And that's the balance that I try and strike with clients, that you find a way to show why someone is exceptional, but also how they're also really a lot like a lot of other people. So it's a very nuanced kind of work that I do, and that's why I think that's why I love it and I enjoy it, because I'm constantly challenged. It ain't easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not easy.
No. And it's particularly, I would imagine, not easy, because what a year it has been. Let me just ask broadly, do you ever wake up in the morning and wish for a slow news day?
No. Well, I mean, maybe. On Sunday, when I'd love to stay in bed, you know, like, seriously. No, because you know what? Every time we have one of those, and there's always news now, you know, and often I always try and look at the silver lining on things, even if it's some, you know, somebody uttering something inappropriate about LGBT people, or whether it's a fantastic, you know, like a Supreme Court win or another state that you know, has passed marriage legislation, or, you know, a kid who wins their, you know, a transgender kid who wins the homecoming king,
right,
you know, title at their homecoming. No matter what the story is, to me, it's about steps forward, whether it's a baby step, whether it's a big step, because the reality is, while we have made a tremendous amount of progress, and we can all, I think, this year be grateful and thankful, right, on Thanksgiving, for a lot of incredible success in one of probably the gayest years ever this year, we still have a long, long way to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I spoke at a Transgender Day of Remembrance event last Sunday out on Long Island, and, you know, I talked about how we really still have so much to do for our transgender brothers and sisters who are still, you know, far more likely to live in poverty, far more likely to be rejected by their families, you know, far more likely to have to, you know, live on the streets.
Right.
You know, there's just so much discrimination. And there's still a tremendous amount. We don't have a federal, you know, employment non-discrimination law.
Right.
For LGBT people, all of us. And so we do have a ton to do, but we have also, yes, this year has been incredible, just incredible in terms of progress.
Do you think back on your time as the GLAAD National News Media Director and think, wow, it was different when I did this?
Oh, good Lord, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, we were, you know, I was like, I think half of my work was, you know, battling the meanies. You know, it was a campaign against Dr. Laura or Dr.
Right.
Michael Savage or Eminem. I mean, it was a lot more reactive. And what I love about the shift that we've seen in the culture and in the media generally is that a lot of it is about being proactive, is about, you see positive stories that come out, and then you get to push those out. And you see, especially with social media and the internet and sort of the constant growth of ways to connect online with people, the ability to get stories out there in a proactive fashion that just wasn't possible even, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. And so, yeah, the shift has been incredible, and I think, you know, a lot of us have adapted to it. And it's not just a technological adaptation. It's also a psychological adaptation, because it was easy back then to fall prey to the I'm a victim. Right.
Right.
And now it's very different. And now you can, you know, it's walking with your head held high and your shoulders back is much more common than
right.
than the other. And so, you have to really adapt to what is a constantly changing world, but keep in perspective that we still need to be very, very vigilant about making sure things get done right. As I often say to potential new clients, you know, I'm not interested in working with people who just want their name in the paper. And I'm very honest about that.
Yeah.
And I want clients who have stories to tell, who have, you know, a mission in mind and who want to educate the public about things and not just have their name in the paper. And sometimes people don't like that, but that answers my question as to whether or not I really want to work with them.
Exactly. And certainly the national media outlets have made a ton of progress and stories everywhere. I would definitely still argue it's on kind of that local media front where there's still quite a bit of work to do. And you cited even, look, you have a local paper in Montana covering this, and that's such a big deal. But we still see stories all the time of local media who want to cover stories but maybe don't still have the tools to cover stories appropriately. For our activists in the local communities who are trying to get this coverage, what advice do you have for them to maybe even educate their local media sources?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's always back to basics. It's really what I did at GLAAD for so many years. It's about having local activists sort of not just understand, but take the time and resources and do what they need to educate.
I mean, right.
I've always, you know, seen myself as more than just a source for media, but as a resource.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had, you know, journalists still call me today, you know, every day, and they know I don't have a client that's working on whatever XYZ issues they're working on. But they know that I'll talk to them. They know I'll answer dumb questions, and they know they're dumb questions. And they know that I'll help them find somebody good to talk to. And I still do that, and because I find that, like I said, I'm an activist. I'm not a publicist. It's part of my responsibility to the community to really, try and not just make sure that there's visibility and coverage, but that there's good visibility and coverage.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk specifics. We start with, holy cow, what a name. I have two words for you. Let me get your reaction. Edith Windsor.
Edie. She likes Edie.
She likes Edie.
Yeah, she doesn't like Edith at all. She said it makes her sound old. And I'm like, you're 84. But anyway, so,
I was starting with respectful, and then I knew you would correct me. So.
Nah, please. She'll drag you out on the dance floor like she did on Saturday night at the LGBT Center in New York City, had a women's event, and you know, the second dinner was done, and it was a beautiful event. They honored Laverne Cox, and the entire cast of Orange is the New Black was there. And if you go on my Facebook page, you'll see pictures of Edie Windsor, who's about, 5 foot nothing, and Laverne Cox, who's like, 6 foot.
It is a hilarious image.
It's a fantastic picture, and Edie loves it because they love each other. And, you know, she just leans over to me, and she's like, okay, we're going to the after party, right? So... And I feel like I often say, you know, I mean, I've been blessed to work with incredible people in this community, and a lot of them are names that people won't recognize. A few are household names. I would put her in that category. But what I absolutely adore about this woman is that, you know, she could have won this case, gotten a check from the government, accepted a few awards, and then kind of said, okay, fine, I'm done. You know, I'm 84, but now she's really sitting and thinking about, what are the other issues that are important besides marriage? What are the ways that I can have an impact, especially on young people? And she's such a positive person and such a positive role model. You know, she's so joyful, you know, and it's really like, I joke that it's like being, I can't tell some days whether I'm a publicist for Lady Gaga or Rosa Parks. It's like this interesting combination of the two because you can't walk down the street that people don't stop her.
Yeah.
And they cry. And they thank her. I mean, little kids, I have a friend in New Jersey who, her daughter's 9 years old, and she couldn't come to this event because it was alcohol, it's kind of an adult event. And she sent her this lovely thank you card, and Edie sent her a thank you card back, and this kid is now, like, running around school telling everybody, you know, look, I got a card from Edie Windsor, and if they don't know who Edie Windsor is, boy, she schooled them. You know, I mean, because Edie Windsor, my moms can get married now. And so... It's been wonderful to see what she likes to call her love affair with the gay community, you know, kind of continue. So it's like, it's exciting to be on the cover of Out Magazine. We've got some really exciting things coming up that I can't talk about between now and the end of the year, because it's been such a big year for her, that will, you know, raise her visibility and talk about, you know, what she's doing now, what she wants to do even more. But the reality is that I don't think I've, in my entire career, had someone who is such a, and I say positive in the best way, not like because she's a good person or she's better than anybody else, but like a positive, accessible person who really represents so much of our community.
Yeah.
Because her life spans the movement, the time of our movement. I mean, she was engaged in 1967. I was two.
Wow.
You know, seriously. You know, I mean, she and Thea documented their lives in a way that we have not really seen. I mean, photos that go back to the, you know, the mid-60s. And, you know, there used to be like five lesbian photos from the mid-60s. You kept seeing them over and over in every documentary. When she allowed people into their lives and with the documentary, the Edie and Thea Long Engagement, but then also just through, you know, other things where she's going to have a website coming out in December and other stuff, it's really giving young people a true sense,
right,
of someone that's who's right in front of them, but who brings this history with her and is very open about how in the 60s men and women were very segregated, that, you know, that there was a lot of discrimination and even hostility between, you know, those who were more, quote-unquote, as you said before, assimilationist types, and, you know, as she likes to say, the queens who fought at Stonewall. I mean, she didn't think she had anything in common with them, and then she realized she has them to thank.
Right. There's this palpable accessibility to her. And you can easily see with this story, as you take a step back and look at her story, that there were various points where this could have just become the most private matter. You know, it is inherently a private matter, and that she has opened herself up in this way to be the every mom and the every wife and the every activist is really inspiring on a whole different level.
Except that she's also very fabulous and glamorous.
And then there's that.
There is that. Yeah. I mean, it's really Bruce Weber, the incredible photographer, just had a book come out, and he included a, you know, he does this American People book, like every year he does one. And this year he included Edie and Thea. And so there are older pictures of them, but then he took some new portraits of her. And they're incredible. And, you know, so, she's trying to do things, I think, that will bring her to a whole new audience. Because there was a book signing in Manhattan, and she went and she signed books. But she said 90% of the people there were straight, and a lot of them didn't know who she was.
Hmm.
And then they opened the book, and they saw who she was. And this is in Manhattan, right? You know, because it's hard to find somebody who doesn't know who she is, especially once you describe who she is.
Like, right.
You know, that old lady that beat the Supreme Court. Oh, yeah. and so it's really, it's interesting. You know, but at the same time, I mean, I've had a year, you know, and I've had quite an interesting, challenging kind of personal year and professional year. And now I've got the new company that I'm working with. I'm working for Howard Buford, who's an amazing pioneer.
Oh, yeah.
Diversity, marketing, and advertising, and doing outreach to communities of color, African American, Latino women, and LGBT. He was on GLAAD's board for many years. I mean, we're with this new entity, and it's just, you know, it's extraordinary to know that we have Edie, of course, as a client, but, you know, we're also working with somebody like Dr. Perry Halkitis, who has for decades done research, behavioral research on HIV and AIDS, and, you know, he just recently came out with this book called The AIDS Generation about men, including himself, frankly, who've been living and surviving with the virus for 20-plus years. And, you know, nobody's really talking about these issues. And so we have the opportunity to tell stories that no one else is really trying to tell.
Right.
And that's, you know, so it's really all my clients are incredible. And it's really been interesting to watch over the course of this year. We see so much progress in marriage, but I also see a lot of conversation, and hopefully we'll see some action about dealing with issues beyond marriage. Certainly there's more to do around marriage, but, you know, we've only got 16 states. We've got quite a few more to go, and a federal victory, which is wonderful. But, you know, people are talking about, you know, the challenges of HIV and how the gay community needs to address it more. We're talking about homeless LGBT youth. We're talking about LGBT family issues, and we're talking about all the things that, you know, are also extremely important, transgender rights that, you know, are still incredibly lacking in a lot of legislation, not inclusive, and places where we still have so much work to do. So, you know, I think we can celebrate the year and be thankful and grateful for all the progress we've made, but I think we also need to, I always like to say, you know, take all of that good feeling and then channel it and use it to inspire us to do more.
Create more change. Well, hey, tell me about the film. I've not yet seen it. I'm kind of dying to see it. Tell me about the film Matt Shepard Is a Friend of Mine.
Oh, what a wonderful film. I, you know, the only thing I can say that would be in any way construed as not positive is that I wish this movie came out 10 years ago. I mean, it took a long time for his friends, and these are truly his friends, to do this film. Michelle and Liam and all the people he went to school with when he was in Switzerland and friends from Wyoming that he grew up with. But I think it was really the grieving process. You know, it took them a long time to really wrap their minds around the fact that they had lost this person who was their friend, but this person was almost lost to them as a person because he became such a iconic figure and public figure and symbol, you know, in some ways. And we talk about that a lot. But Michelle Josie has made an incredible film. It's now screening at festivals. It's actually screening in Amsterdam this week at the Independent Documentary Film Festival, which is amazing. It's a huge honor.
That's great.
Judy and Dennis and the rest of the family are in the film. It's really the only film I've ever seen that simply tells his story. And it was the first time I watched it, I was actually watching it on, you know, one of those secret passport Vimeo thing, you know, things online. And I was in a hotel, and I couldn't watch it for more than 10 or 15 minutes at a time without stopping because it was really hard. There's video of him talking, and I had never, I think there was one short news piece from, like, North Carolina that went on the Internet right after he was murdered that I'd seen years ago. But there's home video of him, you know, and it really, it just makes him real.
Yeah.
You know, he's not some symbol. He was somebody's brother. He was Logan's brother. He was Judy and Dennis's son. He was Michelle and all of these kids, well, not kids anymore, but all of these young people's friend. And he was a good friend. And he was a good person. And he had dreams and he had hopes and he had challenges. And this film really brings to the world a three-dimensional story of Matt Shepard that no one's seen before. I mean, you can go see the Laramie Project, and that's fine, but the Laramie Project's not about Matt. It's about Laramie.
Right.
You know, and you can see some of these made-for-TV movies, and some of them are okay, but they're all about what happened to him. This is about him.
So I was in one of my college classrooms earlier this semester and teaching a class in multiculturalism and education and got to the gay day, and we'll talk about why there was even a gay day on a whole nother show, but talked a little bit about Matthew Shepard, and I know why he's important to me. You know, I know in terms of my own journey and him being murdered the year that I came out and he and I being the same age and all those different pieces that came together. And so when he came up in conversation and no one, not one student in the class, knew who he was, I knew on a personal level why that beyond irked me. I was going to say irked, and that doesn't even begin to cover it. But I think I struggled a little bit, even as the professor there in the class, to articulate to them why it was so important that they know who he is. What would you have told them?
Well, I think at this point, because it's been 15, it was 15 years in October, right? And I do a lot of speaking at, you know, high schools and colleges and with younger audiences. And, you know, it's not that you can't blame them that they don't know. They were, you know, two
right.
when this happened.
Right.
And, you know, unless they're, you know, very astute, you know, students of LGBT history or extremely engaged in the community, it's not that hard to understand why people wouldn't know specifically who he is or always that kid in Wyoming that was killed in a hate crime, like in a more vague sense. So what I see it as is an opportunity to not just retell his story, because I think that's the easy way out. I think what it offers is an opportunity to tell a larger story. And that's what Judy does. I mean, Judy certainly talks about Matt. She gets questions about Matt all the time. But she's still doing this work, and she's doing it in a different context now. She's doing it in the context of being a voice as a parent who lost their child to hate crime, but who's now advocating for the rights of all people, really, but specifically LGBT people and our allies, related to lots of different issues and not simply hate crimes. I mean, she's advocating for marriage. She's working on all kinds of other issues, employment non-discrimination. She will lend her voice because she has a voice that people will listen to. And so, you know, what I do is I often say, yes, this was a young man who was killed in a vicious hate crime. One of the things that we learned after his death received so much attention at the time, and I sort of give the quickie version of why I think that is, it gives me an opportunity to talk about how this is still an issue and what's happened, what just happened. Like, here's a hate crime that happened last month here in New York City. You know, a young transgender woman was killed, you know, by the peers. And the person who was arrested has just been released because they don't have enough evidence and people are scared to come forward and talk to the police. You know, so the fact that, you know, Nene Nettles' murderer is, you know, probably walking down the street right now is a really discouraging thing, but says to me that we still have a ton of work to do on this issue.
Yeah.
And that our community needs to pay more attention because this is still happening. We can all rise up, you know, once in 15 years. That's not going to do it.
Right.
We have to be constantly vigilant. And so, in fact, Laverne Cox talked about that when she spoke at the women's event at the center on Saturday night about how, you know, the transgender people are so much more likely to be victims of hate crimes, and yet we're not seeing the media attention or the community attention, frankly, that we need to be. So, you know, I try to do it in that context because I think, you know, we live in such this like information-saturated world. It's really hard. And that's why I'm glad that the Matthew Shepard is a friend of mine film came out, because now they're going to colleges and they're talking about this. And so, yes, there are definitely people that come into the room not knowing that much about Matt or knowing very little or knowing even, you know, not necessarily all the accurate information about what happened. And now they're seeing a real person and a family and friends and a real story. And that, to me, you know, as Judy would say, continues his legacy in a way that I think he would really, really like.
Love that, Judy.
Oh, she's awesome. She's amazing.
She's awesome. All right, well, let me, as long as I have you on the phone, before I let you go, I, of course, want to get some free advice out of you. I got you here, and I'm not being billed for this, as far as I know. So, Kathy, how do I get some traction on the blood donation issue? I feel like, you know, everybody's got their things that they work on, and I have a day job. So I just feel like that's one of those, I'll keep writing about it in the Huffington Post, and I'm thrilled when, you know, a piece goes viral, and yay. But can't seem to really get any traction on it. And that to me is one of those things that I'm always shocked that we don't talk about more.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I remember when I worked with the Williams Institute at UCLA Law School, Dr. Gary Gates did some really fantastic research related to the blood ban and the stupidity of the blood ban. And I know that there are, you know, even my girlfriend was telling me a story about how they stopped doing blood drives where she works because of the blood ban.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there needs to be, it's a two-pronged approach. I mean, one is certainly the advocacy piece, you know, related to educating people by writing about it and talking about it and getting the media to cover it more. And those who are working at the policy level, you know, and they're you know, AIDS, HIV activists working at the policy level on this. But there's also the real opportunity for people who are in communities where they're doing blood drives and, you know, and doing the kinds of things that, you know, blood donations and things like that, especially around this time of year, around the holidays, and saying, hey, wait a second, did you know that this is true and that you are not only excluding people, you're losing out. I mean, you're not doing your jobs for really no good reason at all.
Right.
The data is clear. The research is very clear. And I know they recently lifted the ban on HIV-positive people donating organs to other HIV-positive people, but that's a no-brainer and a tiny step. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's an issue that it's part of that whole constellation of our community, not talking about HIV as much, too, I have to say.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's a huge problem. I had the real honor this last week, and I'll be doing it through next week as well, working with PAWS magazine, which released the PAWS 100, which I would highly recommend people take a look at. They have a Facebook page, and it's POZ is the slang for positive, is the title. It's the leading HIV magazine in the country. And what they decided to do this year was something really incredible. I mean, you know, everybody makes lists at the end of the year, the top 10 of this, or the top 100 people who do this. And what they did this year was extraordinary. They had people who were nominated by community organizations, by, you know, local activists, local advocates, local people in medical communities. And the entire list is made up of individuals who are open about their status, who are all HIV positive or have AIDS, and who are what I would call unsung heroes. They're not the usual suspects. They're not the big A-list names. They're the people who are on the front lines doing prevention work, doing direct service work, doing education, doing policy work, doing all kinds of work. And there are a few that are working on the issue of blood bans, and there are many working on the issue of criminalization, which is another huge thing.
Yeah, it really is. It's an incredible list. I would be remiss if I didn't give a very quick shout out to my buddy Stephen Puibello, who is on right there on the list, and he and I are on the Gear Intent crew together of AIDS Life Cycle, and so I'll see him again this summer, and he's doing incredible work at that intersection of bipolar disorder and living with HIV. So an incredible list. An incredible list. All right. Well, we are thankful for you. It's Thanksgiving. We're thankful for you. You clearly have so much to be thankful for. I have to tell you, you made it through the whole segment without cursing even once.
You know, I am capable of that. You get me to talk about certain bad things that have happened this year. So let's just keep it at that.
And by the way, we should say, because we want her to win, and of course I can't quote your Facebook page because that would be a curse word, but Edie Windsor doing pretty well against Chris Christie there in the Time Magazine Person of the Year poll.
Well, yes, that's an interesting thing. So Time Magazine every year does Person of the Year, and I can only say so much, but she's on the list for the People's Choice. Go vote for her. Diana Nyad is also on the list.
Love her.
I adore her and love her, too, but she's not my client. No, I'm just kidding. Yet she's actually in New York doing a fantastic fundraiser for folks who need help after Hurricane Sandy, and Edie went, and Edie's friends with her. So we love Diana Nyad, too. But she's doing fine against LeBron James. So, but Edie is up for Person of the Year, and I would highly recommend people go and vote. I mean, it's a kind of a fun thing. The editors always decide who it is anyway. They just do the People's Choice thing to get, I guess, so that people can't complain. Oh, here, you want to curse? So they can't bitch after and say, well, we didn't have any voice in this. Well, yes, you did. Not that it meant anything, but yes, you voted online, whatever. But it's really incredible to have, you know, two out lesbians on this list.
Love
it's fantastic.
It. Love
and,
it.
You know, all I have to say is keep your eyes open towards the end of the year. You never know.
You never know. Look, I love a good teaser. I love a good teaser.
Oh, I'm nothing if not a good teaser.
You are also nothing if not one of the best storytellers out there. We love having you on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kathy.
Okay, talk to you soon. All right, have a great Thanksgiving.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, another great LGBT media personality joining us. John Becker is an LGBT activist, writer, and blogger. He currently serves as the managing editor of the Bellerico Project, the web's largest LGBTQ group blog with dozens of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and genderqueer contributors. John has appeared as a guest on major news and political shows, including ABC's World News Tonight, NBC's Today Show, MSNBC's Ed Schultz Show, and Live with Al Sharpton, the Associated Press Television Network. His writing is all over the web, and he is honestly one of the most prolific Facebookers I have ever encountered in my life. And now he's here with us. John Becker, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Ken, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you as always.
Well, I say welcome back because you were last on our show back in January as a representative of the entire state of Vermont, but it's my understanding you're not a representative of Vermont anymore.
That's correct. My husband got a job down here in the D.C. metro area, so we made the move from Vermont to Washington in May.
And there are some gays there in D.C., I hear.
There are a few. I I just saw not too long ago. I don't remember who this survey was conducted by, but D.C. was named the gayest city in the United States. So there are definitely a lot of us here.
Did the survey come out right after you moved there?
Not too long afterwards.
Okay.
Yes,
all right.
I guess I'm proud to help up that gay quotient a little bit.
I was not drawing the correlation. I was just pointing out some timing. That's all I was saying. That's all I was saying. So now you're with the Bellerico Project, and I gave it, you know, a one sentence introduction. But tell everyone about the Bellerico Project.
Well, as you mentioned in your introduction, the Bellerico Project is the largest LGBTQ group blog on the web. We have dozens of fabulous contributors. It's really a space where a lot of the movers and shakers in the LGBT movement, people who are, you know, who are activists, who are involved with LGBT organizations, who are movers and shakers in other ways in our movement, you know, a lot of them come to contribute guest posts or contribute regularly. So yeah, it's a great spot. It's a great open forum for our community. And we have this fabulous slate of contributors, and we do multiple posts a day from the editorial staff and our contributors, and we are dedicated to an open and honest conversation about LGBT-related news and issues that are affecting our movement within the movement and within the greater community.
Nice. Now, I don't want to expose any drama over there at the Bellerico Project, but it's my understanding that there was a little bit of conflict because a certain very high up there put out the idea that you perhaps are too nice or are nicer than him.
Yes, that would be Bill Browning, who's actually the founder of the Bellerico Project and also a dear friend of mine. He apparently had been getting some comments since I came on board the editorial staff about the tone of the blog changing slightly. So there was a little bit of quote unquote drama, but it's all in good fun. And Bill and I have a mutual admiration society, and you know, we're happy to present the yin and yang of the Bellerico Project together.
Nice. Now, we're all about voice. We talk about voice every single week for the past however many weeks, 250 weeks at this point. Tell us, how would you describe your voice, your blogging voice, the voice that you put out there to the world?
Oh, my gosh, that's a great question, and one that I've never been asked before. You know, and as a Midwesterner by birth, I'm not always accustomed to talking about myself, but I'll do my best. I guess for my voice, well, you know, there are several issues that I'm most passionate about, you know, including I have a very extensive background in the Catholic Church. I'm no longer religious, but I have extensive expertise in that area, so I write a lot about the intersection of Catholicism and LGBT rights. I write a lot about religion-based bigotry more broadly. I did a lot of work and have done a lot of work in chronicling the so-called ex-gay industry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another one of my areas of expertise. But in terms of my voice, I guess for me what's most important is, you know, to be factually honest, but to have an opinion, to have, you know, so much of the commentary can be so sterile. And I guess I like to be respectful, but I like to be edgy. I like to, you know, to call people out when they need to be called out. And I like to, you know, lift people up when they need to be lifted up. There are so many people doing so much great work all around the country, and it's really one of the greatest joys of this job for me is to be able to call attention to, you know, to as much of that as I possibly can.
Well, one of the things that I love about your writing, and I don't think that this would come as a surprise to you, but you put your emotions right out there. You are not one of these stoic, I will not show any emotions at all as I blog about what's going on. You put yourself out there.
Yeah, you know, I do try to do that because to me, I would just be dishonest if I pretended that this was some issue that I was, if I wrote dispassionately and pretended that this was just some other, you know, just any old news issue that I was reporting on. You know, this is intimate. There's nothing more personal than LGBT issues. You know, it's an integral part of my life. It's an integral part of my marriage and my community. So yeah, I speaking with, you know, and being honest about my own emotions is something that is important to me as a writer.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about the events of the past year. It's been quite a climactic year, and I don't know if you know this, but on the day that the Supreme Court ruled in favor of marriage equality for the first time, I don't know if you heard about this, there actually was a picture taken of you, not sure if you saw it.
Oh, yeah. Just one or two places.
For folks who don't know, and I don't understand how they wouldn't know, describe to us what happened. And, you know, then what happened?
So it was the last week that the Supreme Court had announced that they were going to issue a ruling on, you know, on the rest of the cases that they had still held. And I went down every day to the Supreme Court just because I wanted to be there when the ruling was announced. So for the first two, you know, there were 3 days on the schedule, and the first two were they did not issue the rulings on the DOMA case or the Prop 8 case. So it all came down to the last day. And my husband worked in Virginia, but I asked him, you know, I said, honey, this is the day that it's going to come down, and I really would love for you to be with me for this, because, you know, he and I have been working for marriage equality. We've been marriage equality activists literally since the time of our own marriage almost 8 years ago.
Right.
So this is a hugely important issue for us personally. And, you know, the one person I wanted to be there when we found out the news, good or bad, was my husband, Michael. So he talked to his boss and got a half day off of work and headed down to the Supreme Court with me. And we were there with our sign and our rainbow flag. And, you know, when that decision came down, I was on my phone refreshing SCOTUS blog like everyone else. And I just happened to refresh the phone at the right time and saw that Section 3 of DOMA had fallen. And there was a horde of press there and captured my reaction. It was the funniest thing, though, because in that moment, I as I've seen photos of those moments later, I really don't have a very good recollection of anything other than my feeling and being with Michael and being overcome with emotion at the milestone that had just taken place. I don't remember, I don't remember the press taking pictures, even though they were everywhere. I just remember feeling elation, relief, and joy, and sharing that moment with my husband.
So, couple people, some press, take a picture, and you're thinking, okay, well, maybe it'll go on someone's blog in Cleveland, maybe possibly someone in Montana might retweet it, but that's not exactly the reach that those sets of pictures had.
No, a couple of the pictures that were taken of us were picked up by Reuters and the Associated Press, and yeah, so we ended up on the front page of between 65 and 70 that I'm aware of newspapers across the country, on websites around the world, front pages, and also, inside news, countless other newspapers. It was really quite the trip to see, how far those photos spread. You know, we had friends in Germany that were saying, we saw you on our nightly news show, and in the UK, and it was just, and in France, it was everywhere. So we, just happened to become kind of one of the faces of that day, and it was really kind of an honor for us. And the way we look at it is, if someone in some grandmother in the Midwest sees our sobbing queer faces and maybe reconsiders her views, gets nudged in the right direction, it'll have been worth it.
I love it. I love the idea that, and I'm sure it did happen, that it affected people on that very human level, but I love the idea that someone's grandmother was not very accepting, and then they saw your picture, and then they changed their minds.
Well, we can only hope, right?
That's a great hope. That's a great hope. Okay, so that happened, and that was, kind of a big summer and a lot of marriage equality news. But other things, and things that we've talked about on the show that you've been intimately involved with, let's go back a little. Tell everybody about what your beef with Michelle Schacht was.
My gosh, well, Michelle Schacht went on a really crazy homophobic tirade, a very vitriolic one, when she was performing at a concert hall in San Francisco. Or it was a performance space, rather. It wasn't a concert.
Of all places, in San Francisco.
Yes, I don't know what possessed her to do that, but it was this religion-based homophobic rant. And so what I decided to do was I created a change.org petition calling on the rest of the performance venues where she was scheduled to tour to cancel her engagements. And within, I think, about 48 hours it was, they had all canceled on her. And, she ended up trying to do damage control and going on a radio show and just digging herself a deeper hole. And it ended up being that many of us started to wonder whether she might have had a breakdown just because her conduct was so erratic. But she, and then she eventually tried to claim that she didn't mean it to be anti-gay and whatever else, but the vitriol in her initial comments was sadly quite clear, and she she ended up paying the price in the form of her entire U.S. tour collapsing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I remember when we covered that earlier in the year, and it was kind of uncomfortable to even talk about it because there was clearly kind of a mental health thing happening there as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I have no malice toward her, obviously. I certainly hope that she is able to take care of that and get some help there. Because obviously, you know, nobody takes any joy in that. But at the same time, it's important to show that homophobic comments are unacceptable.
Unacceptable. Unacceptable. Okay, so there was that. Now, 'tis the holiday season. You cannot go to a store without our good friends at the Salvation Army ringing a bell outside. It is my understanding that John Becker is not saying put all your money in those jars.
Definitely not. The Salvation Army has quite the history with the LGBT community. A lot of people still, surprisingly, aren't aware that the Salvation Army is not just a nonprofit organization; it's also a church, and it's believed that the church on homosexuality are anti LGBT. So there's that. Last year, when we were still living in Vermont, a very dear friend of ours was working for the Salvation Army and was actually fired from her job because she was bisexual.
Yeah.
That the Salvation Army's anti-LGBT views touches my life personally through my best friend, and we conducted a big campaign of Truth and Doubt around that when I was with that organization. And I just read the other day that apparently the Salvation Army's website refers people who with sexual addictions, they call it, to at least two people who practice so-called pray away the gay therapy. So they're really trying to heal some of the PR damage that they've sustained over the years because of their anti-LGBT views, but on their website, they're still referring people to ex-gay therapists. So they really are sending mixed messages, and for now, I think it's still just as important to for people to know about these anti-LGBT views and to direct their donations elsewhere unless they feel like that kind of bigotry is something that they want to support at the holidays.
Yeah, totally. There's a feature that you do there on the Bellerico Project. I kind of enjoy this. You just put out quotes from notable, not so LGBT-friendly folks, and then I kind of love the part where there's not a lot of commentary, if any, exists at all on there, and you just let the words speak for themselves. And the one that you just put out there was from our good friend Maggie Gallagher, who basically put out there that, of course, loving marriages, as you well know, John, will hurt children.
Absolutely. You know, it's and like you said, that's our quote of the day feature, and a lot, and most of the time, the way I do it, when it's my turn to do that feature, is I really tried overall to as much as possible let their words, as you said, speak for themselves, just because so many times they're just so ludicrous. That comment from Maggie Gallagher in particular, you know, is just insane. The idea that if marriage loses its procreative aspect, which A, if, you know, people are going to procreate with it, you know, in marriage or out of marriage, so that's kind of ridiculous.
Right.
But her assertion that if marriage and children are decoupled, then all we're going to have is loving marriages that are harmful to children is just absolutely insane. The other day, I'm originally from Wisconsin, and the governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker, who is also no friend to our community,
not at all,
made the comment that that his state had employment discrimination protections for lesbian, gay, and bisexual people. They don't have trans-inclusive employment protections. So, but he said, we have these employment protections, and we have a constitutional marriage discrimination amendment. It's a healthy balance. He actually referred to, you know, allowing people to work but not marry as some kind of healthy balance in LGBT rights. So that was another one that I used to kind of highlight the absurdity of that. So, that's a feature that we like to use and a lot of times in that way, just to let people become aware of the crazy that's still out there.
Now, John, my friend, my buddy, did you perhaps last week put out the idea that the Illinois Catholic bishop is gay?
I did. that would be Bishop Thomas Soprocki of Springfield. And he, if I had to pick a list, and again, this is one of the areas that I really follow and know a lot about, if I had to pick a list of the top three worst and most anti-LGBT Catholic bishops in the country, Thomas Soprocki would be on that list. He's just you know, in the run-up to the presidential election last year, he issued a video statement that basically said that if Catholics vote for Democrats because of the Democrat stance on women's reproductive health and on LGBT rights, on marriage equality in particular, they were risking eternal damnation. You know, so he's been an outspoken and very, very vicious opponent of LGBT rights and marriage equality in particular. And he held last week when Governor Quinn signed marriage equality into law in Illinois on the same day, and within an hour or so of the signing ceremony, he held an exorcism service at his cathedral to exorcise the state from, you know, and make it reparation for the so-called sin of same-sex marriage. So he's really, really got a lot of deep-seated anger and bitterness towards the LGBT community for having put up such a fight on this issue and lost. And yes, there are a lot of self-loathing gay men within the Catholic hierarchy, and far be it from me to say for certain, but it wouldn't surprise me if Bishop Procki was one of them.
Did you perhaps put out there also the idea that his vestments were quite sumptuous?
They were quite sumptuous. Yes, there's a photo up on the site with this you know, this blue purple this deep blue purple vestment and lots of gold. It just looked so fabulous. I think it would have made Pope Benedict XVI blush.
And that is no mean feat in itself. That is something. What are you looking forward to in this upcoming year? You know, we're coming to the end of the year, and obviously there are many more states that need to work on marriage equality. One might argue a majority of the states. What other issues should we be keeping our eyes on?
Well, I'm looking, you know, like you said, there's I'm looking forward to continued progress on the marriage equality front. You know, in the last maybe third of this year, we've had a huge, well, the push has been ongoing, but we've had a really large public push for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act,
oh, yeah,
ultimately passed out of the Senate. So that's huge, and I'm expecting and looking forward to continued pressure on that front, especially for the House of Representatives, where the Speaker Boehner won't even allow it for a vote. So I'm hopeful that the pressure on that front will continue. I'm looking forward to there's continued pressure on the open trans service in the military front. That fight is just starting to amp up, but I'm starting to see a lot of movement in the grassroots in the LGBT community about that. So that'll be exciting. There's a whole host of issues that I'm looking forward to continued progress on, but those are just a couple highlights.
Now, you are geographically now much closer to the White House, so you have to be careful with what you now put out there, but how are you feeling these days about President Obama and the gays?
How am I feeling these days about President Obama and the gays? Well, you know, President Obama, when he came into office, the country was so fatigued from eight awful years of George W. Bush that, you know, we imbued him with the almost messianic expectations that nobody could no human being could possibly live up to. But that being said, I'm incredibly happy with what he has done for our community. He is by light years the best ally our community has ever had in the White House. It's not even close. So you know, he's a human being, and of course, like anyone else, has his imperfections. I wish he would sign an executive order prohibiting employment discrimination in businesses that do the business with the federal government. So, you know, there are things like that that I wish he would move faster on, that he could do more on. But overall, he's an amazing ally to our community, and I just can't say enough about how wonderfully pro-LGBT his administration has been. When you look at the way they moved to implement the DOMA ruling when that came out in June, they've pushed all across the board in every area of the federal government to implement that ruling as widely as possible. When they decided to grant federal recognition to all legal same-sex marriages, regardless of what state the couple lived in for federal purposes, you know, that was just huge. That impacted, you know, thousands and thousands of LGBT people across the country. What they're doing with binational same-sex couples is huge. The list just goes on and on and on. So, you know, for all of his faults, I am incredibly grateful that I voted for him. I'm so grateful that he's in the White House, and I would vote for him again today.
All right, there you go. Well, we talked about this very briefly in January, and I just want to return to it at the end of our chat here. To out you a bit, you are 28.
Yes.
You are one of the very few activists out there who makes me feel old.
Oh, my.
Not so into that.
That.
We can work through that in a separate show. But are you finding that there are a lot of activists out there under the age of 30 who are inspiring you?
I am. It's really refreshing, actually, to see the way that support for LGBT equality has grown. And it's grown across, you know, all across generational lines. But as a proud millennial, I will gladly say that that my generation supports LGBT rights by landslide margins. I mean, we're talking, I think, like 70 or 80%. So it's a huge, huge landslide margin of support in my generation. And there are tons of people my age and younger who are energized, who are active, and who are really creating a lot of great change in their local communities and nationally. Yeah, it's really inspiring to see. It's really inspiring to be a part of, and it really gives me great hope for the future.
Nice. Just technically, just so you know, John Becker, I'm a millennial too. I'm just putting that out there.
Oh, very cool. Well, then more power to you.
Just wanted to check in there. Well, tell everyone where they can go to learn all about the great things that you, sir, are doing.
You can follow the Bilerico Project. It's bilerico.com, B-I-L-E-R-I-C-O.
Nice. Now, my assumption is, and I said this briefly in your intro, my assumption is if you are away from Facebook for too long, you start to get the shakes.
My job does contain a hefty social media component, and I do quite enjoy it. So, yeah, if I'm away too long, I withdraw.
Does Michael come anywhere near your Facebook use?
He's increased his Facebook usage in the time we've spent together, but he isn't quite as much of a devotee as I am.
I love it. Well, look, what I love about what you do, John, is that you are just so authentically putting your voice out there. You are raising the issues that are important. You are inserting your spin onto it that comes from your own passion and your own interests. You are reminding us that, hey, we got to do some fighting, and hey, these things affect us and they're important to us. And I would be totally remiss if I didn't again say it is just so inspiring to be reminded that, oh my gosh, there's this whole other generation coming up of folks who are so passionate and using their voice in such an amazing way. You must keep doing this, sir.
Well, gosh, Ken, that means so much to you, saying, and I really appreciate that. And I send those words right back.
A true pleasure having you on the show. Please keep writing, John. All right, folks, that wraps things up for this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay, our Thanksgiving episode. So enormously thankful for all of you for listening. It has just been an incredible 5+ years of doing this show with you, our 6th Thanksgiving with you. We actually will not be having a new episode next week. We're going to take a week off so that we can do some catching up. But the week after, that second week of December, Kate Clinton, the legendary Kate Clinton, is going to be on the show. So that's an amazing thing. Get out there, folks. Go enjoy your tofurkies. Be thankful for everything in your life and use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for others. And then they'll be thankful too. Get out there, folks, and remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?